It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
And we've made it to a Thursday. The official first day of what? The second week of August. You thought I was going to say the first day of the exhibition season. Well, the first full slate. Well, anyway. I'm usually the one who's like, oh, God. Exhibition NFL football. But I just think there's so many intriguing stories and interesting rookies and new coaches and just fun stuff to talk about. The Jets and Giants usually play the last game of the exhibition season. They play tonight because, well, they actually play a game that matters sometime in November. Technically, it's a Jets home game, but like the Lakers and I can't even think of their name. Maybe they should change it. The Clippers, who share an arena. You know, I wonder how frequent that is. Not football, baseball, like, you know, the A's and Reds for years, the Yankees and the Giants, Jets and the Mets, and I'm sure it goes on and on and on. But teams in the same sport sharing an arena or a stadium, I wonder if the Chicago teams ever shared it. The Chi Sox and the Cubbies, they both date back 100 and change years. And obviously, you know, you have to have two teams in the city, which is pretty uncommon. I wonder where the Boston Braves played their home games when they were a National League franchise before moving to Atlanta in the 1950s, late 40s. Anyway, this is the stuff that popped into my mind. I've got some thoughts on what to look for this evening in our exhibition games. You know, another thing I forgot to do was look which games are on. Is there like an NFL Network game? Is there a network game? Is there a ESPN game? Okay, so they played in Atlanta, Boston, from 1912 to 1952. I happen to know that Fenway was built in 1912. They were also the Boston. Now, that's really strange. They were the Boston Braves up to 1935. Then they were the Boston Bees from 36 through 40. Then they went back to the Boston Braves again. That seems strange. Braves Field. That doesn't sound anything like Fenway Park. I think if it actually were Fenway Park, they would probably refer to it as that.
Hot take, Steve.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Wow. I just opened the text line. And a couple people are saying, so what do you think of Yankees White Sox next year from Iowa? Field of Dreams. I'm intrigued, and first of all, the thought of 8,000 people is kind of an intimate setting, although for fans of like Tampa Bay and Oakland and some of the bad teams right now, it's like, you guys really think you could get 8,000 people to watch you play? And I was joking because there was a period, you know, historically on the timeline, 47, 48 years ago is a really long time. But once the Yankee dynasty that lasted pretty much from the 20s until the mid-1960s ended, they started being really bad. And naturally, they timed it out just in time for me to start being interested in the team. I mean, in 1965, 66, 67, they never won more than 77 games. They started to get a little bit better than Uncle George bought the team. But I remember going to some late season games And, you know, they drew $1.2 million in 1967. Although back then, you know, teams didn't draw like they do now. I mean, Wrigley, Fenway had long, long runs of attendance, sellouts at their place. I mean, for weird thing, think about this. In 1968, the Yankees drew 1.2 million people. They were third in attendance in the American League. I'd like that. That'd be kind of interesting. When did 3 million people start showing up? Would I be correct? Did the Dodgers draw like 4 million people one year? The Yankees started drawing, the Red Sox. But the weird thing is, the old stadiums were incredibly spacious. And, you know, old Yankee Stadium held like for 62,000 or something like that. I mean, you would never build a baseball stadium now that held that many people. For example, last year, the Dodgers led the National League in attendance, 3.86 million. That's a lot.
This is via Wikipedia, but the progression of the home field attendance record, the first team to cross a million, the 1920 Yankees with about 1.3.
1920, huh?
1920, yeah. Huh. The Cubs in 1929, 1.4. The Yankees crossed the 2 million person threshold in 1946. The L.A. Dodgers in 78, 3.3 million.
Wow.
The Blue Jays then beat that 3.8 million. The Blue Jays,
was it 92 or 3?
1990, 1991, and 1992, the Blue Jays beat their record one after the other after the other. They went 3.8, 4,100,000.
Wow, they were the first 4 million team, huh?
Yeah, 4,028,000 in 92. And the Colorado Rockies in the first year of their existence.
93?
483,000 people. They averaged 55,000 per game.
So at that time, people were saying, yeah, that was a good idea to locate a franchise to Denver.
I think it worked.
So that's the record, 4.4 million. And like you just said, nobody's going to average 50,000 a game now. I mean, you get certain teams in the playoffs don't sell out.
Yeah, so you have there's only been, I think, four franchises to ever do it, but it's happened four or five times. The Blue Jays in 91, 92, 93, the Rockies in 93 as well. Both of them averaged over 50,000, which is incredible. The Yankees did it in 05, 06, 07, the Mets and the Yankees in 2008. The Mets had 4.042 and the Yankees almost 4.3, with 53,000 people showing up to, I guess, old Yankee Stadium or Yankee Stadium 2 or whatever.
Right, right. Well, there was one Yankee Stadium until 1976. Then they renovated it. And then they raised it and built the new one in 2009. Did I say? I'm not sure.
That makes sense because, yeah, the 2008 All-Star Game was at Yankee Stadium because it was the last year of that Yankee Stadium, which would make sense that they would have the most people show up that year to that stadium because, hey, it's the last time you're ever going to be there.
Yeah, that seems like that would be a draw. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, feel free. Water's clean. Want to get to some MLB as we are now into the second week of August. 50, when I say there's 50 games left in the regular season, not all teams have 50. Some have less. But and it is kind of a light schedule today. Yesterday there were more matinees than there are games today. That, you know, records being set this year, and we kind of joke about it. It's kind of like, well, having a first in like the Pac-12, which has been around since 2011. You know, they play nine games against each other each year. And if you see a first, you're like, yeah, well, it's pretty new. Actually, even a Pac-10, which has been around since 78. So if there's a first in Major League Baseball, it's like, Wow, that incorporates a lot. So it's like this year, by the way, at what point do the powers that be just throw up their hands and be like, yeah, we totally did something to the baseball?
They never will.
I know they won't. I don't think they can.
I mean, who would that upset? That would upset pitchers the most, right? Where they said, we changed the baseball so that when somebody hits the ball, it's more likely to be a home run. Because that would have to piss them off the most, right? Because all of a sudden you're making them look worse by being out there and saying, you've gotten too good at making people look bad at baseball, so we had to make sure that if somebody swings one-handed and hits a ball that's, you know, 5 feet outside and they barely make contact, we want to make sure that ball becomes a home run.
Well, it is. They don't have to worry. The Yankees hit five homers, and it's not their total. It's they have like 58 homers against the Orioles this year. That's crazy. You know how we were joking the other day about, so the league 1 year hit like 59 homers the year Ruth hit 59. And so they did it against one team. And I'll tell you, to show how much, has any team ever done more to avoid headhunting than the Orioles this year? It's like, Yankees are up. I don't care, coach. I don't care, commissioner. I don't care, law enforcement. I'm throwing in the dugout at them. I can't take these guys anymore. They're giving me a nervous twitch. I can't frigging sleep at night.
I have a question about this in the lightning round, so I'm not going to share all of my facts about it. So a little tease there. But there's one guy on Twitter, at John Boys, who has gone through and he was running the numbers on the Orioles. At the rate that they were giving up homers, and this was maybe like a month ago, but at the rate they were giving up homers per game and everything, they basically turned every batter into the opposing team's lineup into a 35 home run a year hitter. Like on average, like every, if you played the Orioles again 162 games a year, base or 162 times, you would just about at the way they're playing be a 35 home run hitter for the entire lineup.
That's silly.
Yes.
And there are two indicators that I would cite. If somebody said, you know what, this might be a surprise, we want you to head up the investigation. Give us reasons you think that the ball's been altered. And I'd go, well, first of all, bring in the guys from StatCast. I want to know how many 430-foot homers there have been compared to the past, how many 440, 50, 60, and on. Then I want to get the vitals on the guys doing it. I mean, you know, if somebody as big as Judge is hitting a homer, it's like, yeah, I can see that. But then you get these 5'11", 185, and he hit it 446? How? And the kind of pitch. For example, originally in the middle to the latter part of the 1980s, maybe it was the latter part, and I think it also started to coincide, guys like McGuire and Canseco entered the league, and we know what they're attached to. And so to get to Shea Stadium from where I grew up, if you buzzed, if you went right through over the bridge, then over the Triborough, then the traffic wasn't that bad, Grand Central, and you got to Shea in an hour and a half. So we left after work one day. So we're all about 26 years old. There's four of us idiots in my car. We're going to see the Mets and the Cardinals. And it's the 87 season. It's the year after they won it. And it probably took us 2 hours and 15 minutes. But it was also like the early days of all sports radio. So we've got what is now WFAN on. And the conversation turns to, there were so many running jokes about rabbits. The balls got rabbits in them. And a pitching coach said, I'm not saying there's rabbits in the balls, but I put 12 in this bag. I went to get a cup of water. I came back. There were 17. It was just on and on and on and on. And we're kind of engaging in the conversation. And we're all kind of naive. We love baseball. We don't want them to think that they're messing with the game. We certainly had no wind or idea of anything related to performance-enhancing drugs. And the Mets had a catcher who was a starter in 86 by the name of Rafael Santana. And his vitals, He's maybe 160. He's kind of tall, drink of water, 160. And this guy had one homer in 86. Then all of a sudden in 87, he's got like four. So we're at Shea, and he takes a pitch low and outside, and he hits it. Shea used to be 410 straightaway, power alley 396, left 371. And he drives it kind of in between. And I remember my buddy Witt saying, if that guy is driving the ball out the other way, something ain't right here. And, you know, the guy played, I don't know, 7-8 years in the majors. He was maybe a full-time starter for 4 years. I think he hit like 8 homers, you know. And this guy's driving the ball out the other way. I know I brought this up a few times in the last couple weeks, but that one game over the weekend where Sandoval hit a ball that it's like he dove at it with his bat, barely got one hand on it, and it went out to left field and it was a walk-off. And it's like, well, that would definitely be, Your Honor, I'd like to present this as Exhibit Z.
Well, at least with that home run, it went like an inch over
right,
the wall.
Right, right, right. I will
and, like,
give you that.
Yeah, the guy, like, you know, the left fielder had a chance to make a play on it. And like, if he times his jump better, maybe he's got a chance. Schwarber did one. Kyle Schwarber of the Cubs did one like a week later. And it was the same swing on basically the same pitch. And he hit it with one hand. And it went 390 feet and like cleared the wall by like, you know, dudes in the bullpen are ducking because they're like, I saw how he swung. That shouldn't be landing at my feet. What is going on here?
The moonshots that a guy, a big power hitter, gets a fastball, guesses right, and there's that crack of the bat. Okay, that happens. But I've seen too many balls up around the neck, down below the knees, just not where you would consider the red hitting zone, that end up, you know, that sound StatCast makes when you see the highlights later. And it's like the outfielder takes like a step and a half back. And he's like, I thought I had it. It's like way gone. It's 40 feet over the wall.
The only other thing it could be is the bats. And Major League Baseball the entire time has been telling people, secretly leaking out this information and having people, oh, yeah, you can't examine the baseballs. Those are sacred. We are very solid and safe in our creation of baseballs and how they're manufactured. And no, you can't look at a baseball, and you're going to have to find a baseball from last year to compare the differences. And maybe that's not even the right baseball. And the entire time they've been dealing with Rawlings and Louisville Slugger and I think axe handle bats or whatever they're called, and all the bat manufacturers, and like, hey guys, have you glued juicy balls or bouncy balls inside the middle of the bats? That'd be perfect. That'd be great.
Bouncy balls.
Yeah, just the bats are all corked with bouncy balls.
We've had some great corked incidents over the years. Sosa had one.
Oh, the best one.
Albert Bell had another one. And after Bell, he appeared on, I think, the Letterman show. And basically was like, the guy hits the ball 600 feet. What's he want to do, hit it 800 feet?
Why don't players try and, like, cork their bat now? Is it just, like, steroids are that much easier? Or, like, hey, the ball's already juiced, so I don't have to cork my bat, basically?
Yeah, with the trajectory and angles and all the film study they do, I don't think it's necessary anymore. Somebody out there correct me or clarify. So with one of the instances of a corked bat, didn't like a clubhouse attendant get caught trying to like sneak through the rafters to get the bat before they could put it into evidence, and like fell through like Bender did in Breakfast Club, you know, something along those lines. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Jersey Jack. How's it going, Jack?
All right, Steve. So, you know, I've been meaning to call you about this when you've talked about the balls before. And I was always thinking that the bats are a lot harder. They use a harder wood. They're using maple. And they're lacquered, heavily lacquered. They used to use ash. So I don't know if that makes that much of a difference, but I bet you it makes a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule anything out, but I've never seen anything like this year. I mean, just regular run-of-the-mill guys who might hit between 18 to 20 homers, all of a sudden they're not fly balls back to the wall. They're moonshots. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, look, some of the Yankees who are hitting home runs. LeMahieu, look at LeMahieu. He's already way over his all-season total.
He's not alone. I mean, just the amount of homers. I mean, Minnesota has already set the record for most times hitting five homers in a game, and we're still
they're going to break the record the Yankees set last year.
Yeah, forever, as you know, being from my generation, the 61 team hit 240 homers. It was the year Maris set the record, and Mantle hit 54, and it looked like that would stand forever. That's not even going to be in the top 10 by the end of this conversation.
That's crazy. I know. Take care.
All right, have a good one, Jack.
I found your corked bat theft incident.
All right, what was it?
It's the 1994 Cleveland Indians were taking on the White Sox, and the White Sox manager Gene Lamont was tipped off that Albert Bell was using a corked bat, so he challenged it, and home plate umpire Dave Phillips confiscated the bat and took it back to the dressing room so it could be analyzed. Turns out later in the game, the Indians knew that the bat was corked, so they're trying to switch it out. So Jason Grimsley, a relief pitcher that had already been used in the game and like snuck off, you know, after he's pulled, goes down in the clubhouse or whatever, takes a bat that belongs to some other dude on the team, climbs into the ceiling area of the clubhouse, and crawled with a flashlight in his mouth like he was a spy, and then crashed into the locker room.
He was John Bender from Breakfast Club. Two poodles walk into a bar.
And he got caught because during the sixth inning, the umpire's custodian noticed clumps of ceiling tile on the floor in the umpire's room and twisted metal brackets in the ceiling. So after the game, Phillips noticed the bats were different than the one he had replaced. They called the police, were involved. It even got dusted for fingerprints until questions were actually answered. That's an actual spy movie.
It's brilliant because what's the classic case? Well, they can't try us for murder without a body. You can't suspend me for having a corked bat without a corked bat. All right.
Why replace it then? Like, that's the thing is, if you put definitely the wrong bat in there, like, then they're going to know something's going on. But, I mean, you could have just, like, the umpire could have been painted as a total and complete fool for forgetting where he actually put the bat. Like, that's way more of a controversy than if he used the cork bat or not. When you're trying to replace it with one that kind of looks the same, but it's a little different, then you get caught.
They try. Oh, God, it's brilliant.
Did the right thing by Kelly Bryant when he told him Trevor Lawrence was going to be the starter after week four. It allowed him to transfer. He made that decision. He was no longer on the team. The next week against Syracuse, Trevor Lawrence gets hurt. They almost lose the game. He could have came in and been the hero. He chose to leave. If I was Dabo, I would have put it to his teammates.
Well, hello, la, la, la. That was Bobby Carpenter. He used to play linebacker for Ohio State a couple years in the association. There's a new football association in the NFL. And this whole thing about Kelly Bryant getting a ring, it's like, so let me get this straight. You were told you're not the starter, and you're like, well, then I'm out of here. Then they won it all. Do I get a ring? No. Next. We who do this obviously look for topics, and when it gets thrown out there, this one, there should be like a sports radio alarm. When did this subject first surface? Let's say it was yesterday at 4:27 on the West Coast. All right, you got another 57 minutes. He don't get a ring. You're not allowed to talk about it anymore. Ding, ding, ding. And like, it would be a real big investment. I realize we've got like healthcare and infrastructure, but just for selfish reasons, everybody who you have to register your microphone if you do sports talk. And after a certain point, if you bring up that subject, it goes silent. You're not allowed to talk. So there'd be like a little alarm that goes off. We could have like an app where it's like, okay, do you host a sports radio show? Yes. You are not allowed to talk about this subject after right there.
We have a little timer function on the board over here. We can absolutely do that. Or now this is all under my governor, and what I decide is interesting or boring has been talked about enough, and I could just turn your mic off.
Well, then maybe the app should be by the producers, because as we know, the host can't be trusted.
That's very true. You can't. You're untrustworthy.
Just, we get it. And, like one of the analysts said, do you put it to the team? No. Because there's that kind of circle the wagons mentality. Although, maybe the team would even be more pissed than the coaches, because he almost became a big reason. So I'm going to get this in by the next 7 minutes.
Oh, is that okay? Starting now.
All right. So, Kelly Bryant left the Clemson program after Hoffman was named the starter. Hoffman, Trevor Hoffman, Trevor Lawrence. What did I gave him another name the other day. The quarterback for Clemson. All right, Trevor Lawrence, Trevor Lawrence, Trevor Lawrence, Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, Clemson was what?
Well, what bothered me the most is I thought it was Kelly Bryan. Not Kelly Bryant. Like a lot of
no,
the times.
It's Kobe. It's Kobe's last name.
Right. So a lot of the times I was hearing it, like people weren't emphasizing the T. So I thought it was Kobe Bryant. And then Trevor Lawrence hopped in. And I'm like, how do they just cycle through these guys with two first names? How do they keep finding these? Is that how you recruit a good quarterback? I mean, are all good quarterbacks two first name guys? Joe Montana, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan.
Montana's a first name?
Yeah, you could probably.
Montana?
I would bet somebody there's out there is like, yeah, Montana. Montana's my first name. That's a pretty cool name. Maybe not Joe Montana. Okay, that's not a very original.
Wait. Don't sell yourself short here, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch. How many states passes names? Well, there's a Dakota Fanning, but okay. That's not definitive. It's not North or South.
Why not just? It should be one big Dakota anyways. So, okay, we'll check off the Dakotas.
Is there a Massachusetts O'Reilly hanging out at a pub in Brainerd?
Well, there's definitely no one named
Connecticut,
Carolina.
Cities are different.
Cities are very easy. Yeah, Tex for Texas, I think counts.
Because we have friends of ours. We watch their little doggy Gus. Their daughter, who's about two now, is named Brooklyn. Plus, there was also Brooklyn Decker. It's just a really cool name.
Well, yeah. Again, and cities are a lot easier to deal with. What if there was an English guy whose name was Harry, but you said it Ari, and it was like Arizona?
No.
No, okay, it doesn't count.
There is an Arizona. I mean, there's a movie, Raising Arizona. It was a kid's name, I think.
There you go. Okay. You can't name somebody Nevada.
Georgia.
Idaho. Georgia. Georgia's a perfect name. Yeah. That's a good one.
The whole day through, I might add.
There's a whole bunch of people that go by Miss for Mississippi, so that counts. Louisiana.
By the way, that was the easiest allowance in the history of radio, allowing Miss for Mississippi.
Lou for Louisiana. Al for Alabama.
Missouri. There is an Alabama. She was the girlfriend in True Romance.
Now it's just a game of can we name all of the states. Nobody's going to be named Pennsylvania.
No, that's too long.
Ohio.
Iowa.
Michigan. Iowa.
Nah, no, I'm thinking
Iowa,
no.
Nebraska. Colorado.
Washington's a very famous last name, but right. I don't know if anybody's named Washington.
Colorado seems like a good...
George Washington Carver. It's been a middle name.
Ooh, that's true. But is that a middle name or was it hyphenated Washington Carver? Because that changes everything too.
Oh, man. I may obsess over this, and it's not going to be pretty. Denver? Is there a Denver? I know there's an omelet.
I know plenty of people named Cali for California, which is what people call Cali. Yeah.
Huh. All right. Suddenly, I'm a little suspect of the people. Here's a good Indiana Jones.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Mic drop. Boom! 284-8571.
If you know somebody named Montana and you can prove my quarterback two first name theory, that would be great.
When Montana got traded to the Chiefs, there was a town in my they screwed around and they got like a little piece of legislation passed. So there was a Joe Montana, a town changed their name just for like a year. And, you know, the population was like 0.7 or something like that.
Was it just, was that where Joe Montana lived?
I'm not sure how it worked. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in James. James, good afternoon. How's it going?
You guys know me. I'm a Niners fan. I contemplated changing my name to Joe Montana. I mean, let's get real. Cool name.
Most of you did for about a 12-year period.
For sure. And then I almost went with Steve Young. But, hey, you guys missed the most obvious one. Virginia.
Oh,
Grandma Virginia.
Okay, yeah, that's bad. Georgia, okay. We got. Virginia's probably the other obvious one.
Yeah, that's like the easiest one ever. There's like a thousand women, hundreds of thousands of women named Virginia in like 1920. And then my daughter's named Charlotte, so there's a good one.
Oh, right. Good one. Yeah, well, it's a city, but
I know.
I see
but
what
you said
you're doing.
Cities were easier, so I was going with the easier one after I went with the Virginia, which was the easiest one that you guys missed. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one. So he called to, in one breath, help, and in the other breath, mock. So good on him. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Is there a Nebraska? Nah. Now I'm reaching. You know what? I would be surprised if somebody wasn't named Wyoming. By the way, when you think of kid, a dynamite, how about Florida was the wife of James on Good Times. So that's up there as well. There's somebody's got to be named Kansas, right? So we just
had a caller bring up Washington Irving.
Washington Irving. There you go. Like I said, Florida is a name.
That's a fun name where the first name is a state and the last name is a city in a different state. How about that?
It's just very confusing. Maryland. There's a Russell Maryland. He was the number one pick in his draft out of Miami. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Dylan. Dylan, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Steve? So it's not my first name, but my middle name is Montana because I was born on the day of the catch.
That counts!
Really?
And my dad was a huge 49er fan that blew up in Vallejo, California. So, and then when my daughter was born, it wasn't until the day that they won the World Series, the Giants, but I named her Madison Pozero. She was still born about 3 weeks after our first World Series in 2010.
Wow.
For San Francisco.
Wow, you guys are diehard Bay Area fans.
Big
I mean,
time
you're
diehard,
doing some
yeah.
damage here.
And then one other note, Deion Sanders has a son named Florida.
Oh, really? That's classic. Wait. Don't go anywhere just yet. A son named Florida?
Yeah, I know that he has a son named Florida because I seen it on an Under Armour camp-type show that he used to have, and his son was on the show, and I just remember him being first name was Florida Sanders.
Wow, so you're born January 10th, 1982.
Yep.
Okay. Nice. Dylan, that's an awesome call. Great information. Have a good one, man. We need to make a note of that. Every January 10th that we're on, we have to play the catch and then wish him happy birthday.
How cool is that, though? Born on the catch and your dad's like, I'm naming my kid Montana. He could have been very easily a Dwight. He could have been a Clark. He could have been Joe. And he goes Montana.
Or the pass could have been intercepted. History could have been changed. And he could have been just named Fred or something.
Dylan named after his grandpa or whatever.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Lou. Lou, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, good, Steve.
All right, what's up?
Well, I got to say, I think you guys are a little out of control with this name thing.
Of course we are.
Okay, of course. But listen, I'm really glad you had a reference to Raising Arizona, because I just saw it for about the third time. And for those who missed the Coen Brothers early stuff, I think it's one of the funniest movies
ever.
It is.
Holly Hunter's
so today,
great.
So, Steve, I've called in maybe twice before. You and I are like the same vintage
crazy East Coasters.
Okay.
And today I had lunch with a guy from Brooklyn I'd never met before, and I'm pretty sure that he was telling the truth and everything. He was born in 1945. He was at Yankee Stadium when Roger Maris hit his 61st home run. He told me he was in the right field stands when that happened.
Okay.
But way better, for those who don't know their baseball history, probably one of the top 10 moments in baseball history is in 1956 when Don Larsen pitched a perfect game.
Right.
And this guy was there, 11 years old, at the stadium, rooting for the Dodgers, and the Yankees pitched a perfect game against them.
Wow, that's some pretty famous baseball moments to be a part of. Maris off of, I believe it was Tracy Stallard of the Red Sox, and the only perfect game in World Series history. Good stuff. Nice running into a guy from Brooklyn.
Can I give you a quick quiz that came up lately?
Why not?
The same pitcher for the New York Yankees pitched the last pitch of the 1960 and 62 World Series.
Oh, the guy who gave up Mazeroski's homer, was it, what the hell is his name, Bob Turley?
Oh, come on, it begins with Ralph Terry.
Ralph Terry, all right, I got Turley and Terry. My bad. Like, I said this, Lou, a couple weeks back. I miss stuff now that I never would have missed 6, 7 years going back. I'm telling you, I've gotten older, too much information, and an inability to differentiate anymore.
Tell me about it. So the 62 series against the Giants, McCovey's up one of the most dramatic moments. He hits a screaming line drive.
Yep.
Two outs in the bottom of the ninth.
Yep, to Bobby Richardson. Yep. That one I got. You couldn't ask me who caught it? Hey, good stuff,
All right,
Lou.
Steve, I'll be talking to you at basketball season. I'm a huge Duck fan.
All right, look forward to it. Take it easy. I didn't know that, by the way. There's Bullet Bob Turley and Ralph Terry. All right, got to get that straight now. Wait. I'm like Kramer. All right, I got it. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ivan. Ivan, how's it going?
Hey, Steve. Hey, in the movie Slaughterhouse-Five, there was a character named Montana Wildcat, and it was played by an actress named Valerie Perrine, really?
Oh, no. Valerie Perrine from the movie Lenny. She was also in the first Superman. No, she was a goddess.
Oh, she was. So there was a Montana with a first name there.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ivan.
All right.
Take it easy.
So if you are the Mets and their fans and you're thinking, well, why do we even bother? Why did we kind of buy? This is why you do it, because DeGrom could beat Scherzer in the one-game playoff, and then maybe, you know, they have the starting pitching. Maybe they can beat the Dodgers. You want to get into that playoff thing. It is a playoff to me, because teams can win the World Series if they make it, and if they don't, they can't.
Who wrote Streetcar Named Desire, or Death of a Salesman, or Glass Menagerie? What one of those famous plays?
Sorry, I owe another dollar. I turned on the wrong mic, so everybody missed your perfect setup except for me. Yeah.
So we were talking about people whose first name is a state, and Nick all of a sudden, about 12 seconds before we signed on, said, what's Tennessee Williams? Is it a whiskey? I'm like, it might be, but I know he's a playwright. And is it Streetcar Named Desire, The Glass Menagerie? Who wrote Death of a Salesman? I think that might have been Arthur Miller. But anyway, yeah, that counts too.
He had, I Googled states because I needed to see a map of the United States to start thinking of names and things. And Tennessee popped up, and the first name that popped in was Tennessee Williams. And I honestly thought it was a whiskey. It might still be a whiskey. It probably should be a whiskey because it sounds like a very...
And it's also in Tennessee where they make Jack.
Right. But it looks like he wrote plays on Broadway, or I guess his recent most success was A Streetcar Named Desire, Summer and Smoke, The Rose Tattoo, Camino Real. Nothing that else that is really standing out here on his Wikipedia page.
All right. Well, Death of a Salesman's pretty I mean, a streetcar. I keep getting those confused. Can we move along?
I guess.
All right. It's the home stretch of what day is it? Thursday? Is it? Is this still crunch time?
We're exhausted.
I am. I'm just going to say, I have a great idea. Let's do this.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
Well, it's the Thursday lightning round, and obviously it's about time I went down for a nap because I got no idea what's going on. So let's get to the lightning round.
Man, ooh, yeah, we both need a nap. Can we just let Fentress, like, we'll call him at 4 and he can just talk.
Right,
we'll
just take go.
Just a 20-minute power nap. That's like the perfect time to nap. It's like 17 to 22 minutes. That's about a Fentress interview. He can just have hot takes. It'll be perfect. Time for the lightning round. Preseason football officially begins tonight. Time for everyone to dust off their armchair scout hats and tweet about the battle for third-string nickel quarter and the best options for a guy to be a backup on special teams. But before the games come, the injuries and the 49ers announced quite a significant one. Nick Bosa, the number 2 overall pick in last year's draft, will not play the entirety of the preseason because of a, quote, significant ankle injury. Bosa played in 36 games his freshman and sophomore years at the Ohio State University, and after sustaining the injury against TCU on September 15th last year, he hasn't played any football, and it's just shocking that he would get hurt in training camp like this. The Niners are extremely deep in their defensive line, so losing Bosa for the preseason shouldn't be too big of a worry, but it still would be nice to eliminate the learning curve in non-counting games rather than the regular season. So Nick Bosa's ankle injury is a big, little, or no deal.
You know, normally I would say like no deal, but when you're coming off an injury and you get injured and you haven't played yet, it's got to be at least a little deal.
Those Boses, man, they're made of glass. Doesn't make any sense. The Orioles, we were talking about them earlier. They might not be technically the worst team in baseball, but they sure play like it. They're 5 wins better than the Tigers, who are the worst team in the majors right now, but Detroit has found a way to at least be quietly bad and not obnoxiously loud Orioles bad. According to John Boyes of SB Nation on Twitter, he's been tracking the Orioles' home run rate, and Baltimore is on pace to destroy the record set by the 2016 Reds for the most home runs given up ever in a season, 333. They've given up 234 in 114 games, which is just over 2 per game. And you, when you play like a team like the Yankees 10 times at home and not only go 0-10, but you give up 43 home runs in those 10 games, it's a great way to make bad history. What percent chance do you give the Orioles breaking the all-time most home runs given up in a season record?
And not only that, they're also the most games out. They're 37 back.
Oh, that's, they're right in it.
90%.
90?
Just for spite.
Man, that's worth watching. Like, yep. Talk about something to root for. The fun and now good New York Mets are probably going to make the playoffs because that just sounds like the exact sort of thing that would happen in 2019. Leading the way are a staff of all-star pitchers and a bunch of nobodies in their lineup. And by nobodies, I mean, like, who the hell saw Jeff McNeil hitting 340 and Pete Alonso destroying the Mets rookie record for home runs? Through 115 games so far, the Polar Bear has 37 homers, and suddenly another rookie record is in his sight, the rookie home run record. This record has stood for eons, dating back to 2017 when Aaron Judge set it with 52, and the simple math turns out that that would need to be 16 homers in 47 games for Pete Alonso. Judge had 35 through the same number of games in 2017, and look how that turned out. So what percent chance do you give Pete, don't call me Peter Alonso, of breaking the home run record?
Well, if I remember 2 years ago, you were asking me a similar question about Judge, and I bet against him because I was like, a rookie hitting 50 homers, that's asking a lot. So I was wrong once. I'm going to hedge and go for being wrong again. I'm going to say I give him about a 10% chance.
All right. The summer transfer window closed today for English Premier League teams, and the season starts tomorrow. Manchester City are looking to repeat. Liverpool, who finished in second by a point, haven't won the league in 25 years, while Chelsea, Spurs, and Arsenal are all in the hunt, or maybe even a new Leicester like Everton can shock the world. The 2019-20 season starts tomorrow as Liverpool are taking on a newly promoted Norwich City side. So who wins the Premier League? Manchester City, Liverpool, Manchester United, Spurs, or other?
You know I gotta go with my Liverpudlians.
Wrong answer, Steve.
Me, a wrong answer. Moi? Yes? All right, looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour, we will chat with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic.
Wow, he got it.
He'll actually be up at whatever that stadium is in Seattle. Quest Field, Husky Field, Lincoln Field.
No, senor! No, senor!
What is it again?
I think it's...
Did I get it right the first time?
It's not CenturyLink anymore. I think it's Quest.
All right, well...
It's certainly not Husky Field.
Denver is playing Seattle to open the preseason. And Fentress should probably be there by the time we speak. And in his new role at the Athletic, almost, he's going to continue to be covering the Seahawks of the NFL and the Ducks of the Pac-12. So we'll talk with him. Anyway, that's coming up the bottom of the hour. As far as what lies ahead, we've got exhibition football. And beyond the games, I'm more curious about the stories and some of the rookies who are going to be out there. I guess we're going to get a chance to see not only Kyler Murray tonight, but also Andy Reid says he's going to play Mahomes for a full quarter. The Giants, go Giants, beat Dallas, are going to give Daniel Jones a quarter out there. So a lot of the rookies that we followed in college will be, in essence, making their National Football League debut. So we got that in MLB, your calls and more coming up. Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.